Thank you so much. It's fantastic to be here in New Zealand. I know this has been a tough week here, and I just wanted to start by saying that our thoughts are with everyone here who's been impacted and everyone in New Zealand. We as Microsoft, we are very committed to doing everything we can to help in the rebuilding and the recovery. So I wanted to start there and know that you all are in our thoughts. Today, we're going to talk a lot about technology and talk a lot about technology as it relates to developers. And whenever I think about my own sort of source of energy, what gives me at least the most pleasure is to be able to talk to developers everywhere in the world. And it sort of starts from who we are as a company. We first started off as a tools company. And whenever I think back as to what is Microsoft's core sense of purpose, it always starts by thinking about developers and what developers can do. In fact, the North Star for us is our mission, which we talk about all the time. It is about empowering every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. There are many key parts to that. These are just not simply a set of words, but for us, it helps guide the choices we make, the products we build, the way we build them, the way we want to show up with those products with customers, emanate from this sense of purpose. For example, we think about people, but we think about people building institutions, organizations to even outlast their own presence in those organizations. To us, that's a first-class software construct even. We think about technology and its global reach and global access and global impact. I mean, I am definitely a product of that. If it was not for Microsoft's technology reaching me where I was growing up, my entire story wouldn't have been possible. But perhaps most importantly, the last part is so key to us, which is it's not ultimately about just our technology. It is about what others can do with our technology. And when you think, you talk about it in that sense, that's probably where developers are the most, you know, interesting conversation to have for us. And it's in our origin. When Bill dropped out of school, the first product he created was the basic interpreter for the Altair. A lot has happened since then. But at the same time, I feel that the essence of who we are is captured in what got us started. And now we've got to express it in a very different set of technologies that are rapidly changing. In fact, that's kind of what we think about going forward, which is our worldview is shaped by the fact that every business going forward is going to be more and more of a digital business. There isn't a retailer or a healthcare company, a manufacturer who thinks of themselves just purely in that industry, but they're increasingly going to have digital content in how they build their product, their service, how their business model works. And that creates an amazing, amazing opportunity for everyone in this room. It also creates, I think, responsibility for each developer to have a much deeper, broader impact in our economies and in our societies. So that's really the backdrop of what I want to talk about. For stepping back from this and talking a little bit about what is the technology paradigm, how do we even describe it? I talk about this as mobile first, cloud first, but I don't mean mobility of a single device. I think about this as the mobility of the human experience spanning all of the computing in our lives. Because if you think about it, right, 5 years from now, we're going to have more computing. Computing that's going to be something that's on, you know, we may be wearing glasses with computing. We may have things in our ears. They're going to be general purpose sensors in every room we go into. We're going to have small screens, large screens. So if anything, the real challenge is how is the experience moving across all this rich computing fabric? And that's where the cloud really makes it possible. The cloud is the control plane that orchestrates that mobility, is really the secular change that's taking place in the world. And that's the backdrop for us to be able to express our own development and our own applications, our own experiences. We want to translate this into three platform opportunities. We want to build out, to start with, even the SaaS applications of Office 365 and Dynamics 365 to have a very rich opportunity for every developer. For example, with Office 365, most people think of it as, well, we had a bunch of servers in the past and let's just move them to the cloud. For sure, that's the case. It's definitely the case that what used to be email or what's messaging or Skype or OneDrive or Yammer or any one of the tools is, of course, being delivered very differently now as a software as a service. But perhaps from a developer perspective, the richness of the data that is now available underneath Office 365 is what makes it very interesting in terms of an opportunity. So we now have a first-class graph API that relates all the artifacts, people, their relationships with other people, their work artifacts, their plans, their projects, their calendars, everything is available for every developer to be able to add to extend, to consume. And not just on the back end, though, we even have the user experience scaffolding, whether it's in Outlook or in Word or PowerPoint or OneDrive or any place where there is user experience. We have extensibility so that your applications can be discovered and found and used within the context of users. So that's the rich way we think about it. So it's not just a set of apps. They are really a platform. And the same approach is what we're taking to Dynamics 365. Because if you again think about what is needed in the world going forward, is there is going to be increased levels of business process automation. What you need is a very different approach than the old world of ERPs and CRMs. You need a much more componentized, workflow-driven, modular approach to be able to meet the needs of increased automation. And that's what we're building Dynamics 365 for. And we want to expose the entire data structures underneath Dynamics for extensibility so that you can customize it for your locale, for your vertical industry, for your business process. And so the approach we're taking with our SaaS applications is perhaps a place where developers can get the most leverage, the most market reach in terms of Microsoft platforms. Now, of course, we want to build the best tool chain for the professional developers, which is mostly people in this room. But we've always cared about the citizen developer. We've always cared about the professional user or the pro user and their ability to also develop. And I feel we're at that cusp of building out a new application platform for the pro user. Power Apps, Flow, Functions, and Power BI are the tools that now can be used pretty much by anyone who uses, let's say, Excel and does modeling in Excel to be able to build applications. And the reason I bring that up is in a world where there is all this computing power, what is needed is applications that exploit that computing power. And so that means we have to really broaden the number of people who take up development, and we really want to make that possible with this new set of applications and tools. In New Zealand, I had a chance, in fact, just coming in to this to sit down and meet with a set of developers and ISVs, very successful ISVs. In New Zealand, you've definitely punched above your weight in terms of building out applications, not just for the New Zealand market, but world over. And I had a chance to meet the CEO of Harpara, which is a New Zealand-based company that's doing some very innovative work around education and how to, in fact, move education to to be not just about technology, but for what it is really about, which is about educational outcome for students. And the entrepreneurs behind it, the founders, had a real vision for how to go about doing that, being grounded in what is the realities of education. And now we're bringing it even to Office 365. So the fact that we create this extensibility and the hooks makes it possible for an educational feedback loop. That is what Harpara is trying to achieve for the students, the administrators, so that they can go about doing what they want to do, which is teach kids and improve their educational outcomes. Now, another example I just got to learn about was Surf Life Saving. It's a solution where they're using both Office 365 and Azure and building a community application for all the lifeguards. Now, the fact that it's a nonprofit organization, it was able to use cloud computing solutions and build out an entire solution for a community shows even the increasing levels of ISV participation or application development participation that can happen in any country, in any economy. And another example is a small business. This is Cheetah Design, is a small business that's again using all these SaaS applications, but deploying it so that they can have the best service, the best artifacts that get created, and the best success in the marketplace. And I just wanted to take these examples of small businesses, nonprofit, ISVs in education, using it beyond, of course, what has been the traditional marketplace that we have served, which is the large enterprises, to show how democratizing this technology is in terms of its broad reach. So that's what we're doing with the Office 365 and Dynamics 365. Of course, now with cloud, we are building out our infrastructure with a worldview that distributed computing is going to remain distributed. And what I mean by that is that there is definitely a new way for compute, storage, and network to come together. But at the same time, we think of compute, storage, network being pervasive. And that's where we are building out our cloud with more data center regions than anyone else. We have over 30 regions worldwide, so we're operating this mega scale cloud. Trust is hugely important. Trust such that we respect the different digital sovereignty needs of countries, regulatory needs of industries, and fundamentally make it possible for businesses to trust the cloud because of the operational security posture that we have across all of this, so that they can put their data, put their computation in the cloud. And to really then not just limit it to our cloud, but to be able to support true hybrid computing. And what I mean by that is we don't think of our service as a legacy business. If anything, we think of the service going forward as the edge of our cloud, whether it's SQL 2016 and its ability to stretch a single database infinitely into the cloud and have all the queries run, whether it's Windows Server 2016 and its ability to have the orchestration layer distributed between the public cloud and the edge, having symmetric container support, any one of those infrastructure choices is so that we can create that infinite compute storage network capacity where you need it. That's the approach we're taking. And our announcements, in fact, just in the last couple of days, and I started the week in Beijing and then I was in Australia, and here I'm in New Zealand, and in between all of this, we've been even doing a whole bunch of press around the different announcements, so I'm trying to keep track of all of those and make sure that each meeting I come to, at least I'm on top of even what has been launched in 1 week. And the thing that I would say is probably the biggest change is how we want to build a cloud that respects the choices you make as developers in terms of the infrastructure you choose, the tool chain you choose, and the applications you want to build. So this is where this any infrastructure, any tool, any app is the theme that you're going to see pretty much across all of the announcements even this week. For example, Linux is already 30%+ of the virtual machines on Azure and increasing, and we want to support that. That's where the, you know, the motivation to join the foundation and contribute to the foundation. Today, if you go into a GitHub, you will notice that we are the biggest contributors to open source. So it's not new, although everybody likes to write about it as new. We have always participated in open source, whether it be the Hadoop community or now the Linux community. We, of course, are even doing the reverse of it, which is taking what we've developed, which is .NET, and making it available as open source and bringing it to other platforms. So the choice goes both ways. The fact that Google joined the .NET Foundation is sort of something that we welcome. And also taking our toolchain that people have loved to other platforms. So Visual Studio on the Mac or SQL on Linux. These are tools that are loved by developers, and now we want to make it possible for them to use it across different platforms that they may be working in and developing in or deploying in. Of course, also the other thing that we want to always think about is developer productivity. That's, again, goes back to that very origin, right? If you think about yourself as a tools company, you think about developers and how are they going to be most efficient, code reuse, speed, agility, and to me, that's what is the motivation behind the Visual Studio Mobile Center. This obviously started with the acquisition of Xamarin, and now to have that full tool chain for you to be able to build mobile applications using anything from React Native to Swift to C Sharp across all of the various platforms is something that we want to enable, not just on terms of the client code, or the logic, but also the test harness that you need in order to be able to support the multiple platforms. Thinking about that entirety is at the core of a lot of the announcements that we've made in the last 24 hours, if I have my time zones right. Now, building out infrastructure, building out the tool chain is interesting, but one thing that I've learned over my 25 years at Microsoft, and particularly associated with developer tools and server infrastructure, is that each generation is defined by applications that developers like you build, and the specific characteristics of the applications that drive the infrastructure development is what's the most interesting. So 5 years from now, when we look back, we'll for sure say that the applications that all of you are building are all not just about great experience and design, but is about data. But not just about data, but the ability to reason over large amounts of data and create intelligence, right? That's what, I mean, if you look at even everything that you've been talking about at this conference or what you're doing, that's why the AI and machine learning and all of the advances there come about. And we want to build out this Cortana Intelligence Suite to truly give you the building blocks for whether it's storing all of the data in its native formats, the ability to do the query processing across all of those, not just relational, but every other form of storage that you may want to process. To be able to give you the rich machine learning harnesses as well as the AI capabilities on top of it. The visualization. In fact, one of the things that I keep talking about is in a world of big data, recognizing small patterns becomes actually the human advantage. And therefore, application developers need to be able to visualize data, give that feedback so that users can get that insight. To me, that is the spectrum of things that this toolkit enables that you can exploit as developers building applications. And perhaps the best example of this that I'm very excited about is what we're doing in the cognitive services and the APIs with it. I've always dreamed of saying, what is the equivalent of the VB moment or Visual Basic moment in the cognitive era or in the AI era? Many of you, when I'm staring at all the student developers here, are thinking about which era is he talking about, and that's right, that is, you were probably not born, for sure. But it was one of the most democratizing moments for client-server developers. I distinctly remember how exciting it was to be able to bring down the barrier to build what used to be a sophisticated client-server application. And now we want to bring that same ethos to this AI or machine learning age by taking the building blocks of whether it's speech recognition. By the way, Microsoft has the state of the art when it comes to speech recognition, which is measured, as you know, by word error rate, which is around, I think, 6.3%. We have the state of the art in object recognition, which is around 3.5%. We have fantastic natural language recognition technology. We have the entire a knowledge base that's exposed as a set of entities and relationships between entities to you as an API. And the fact that now these are just building blocks, APIs, for you to exploit in the context of your applications is going to drastically change the kinds of apps and the kinds of capabilities of apps that you're going to build across all platforms. And that's really the spirit behind these cognitive APIs. And for us, we're seeing the use of these across every industry. It's not just the use cases in consumer internet companies. It's the use cases of these Cortana intelligence APIs, cognitive APIs across every industry that's truly inspiring. And to give you a flavor for it, let's roll just a video to give you a feel for all the developers using some of these APIs. And to me, whenever we think about the platforms, we want to think about the application of these platforms in a very broad spectrum way in terms of its relevance in any society, in any economy. It just cannot be about consumer internet. It has to be broader than that if this fourth industrial revolution is going to actually have a digital dividend, which in fact is more equitably distributed. And that, I think, is really the responsibility of developers. The world needs more of this capability in applications across all our sectors. And that's what I want us to inspire with the work that we do. And you as developers can, of course, make that a reality. We are not just stopping at the building block services, but we even want to take the raw infrastructure, the most powerful capabilities that perhaps in the past were in supercomputers and available for big science, available to every developer. So when we talk about the AI supercomputer, what we did is we essentially took the capability that we built for ourselves, for our own speech recognition and object recognition and eye gaze and all the other things that you see in our devices, whether it's HoloLens or Kinect or what have you, and are making it now available to every developer out there. FPGAs, which stands for Field Programmable Gate Arrays, are now built into every compute node of Azure. And so then we put a fabric layer on top of it, and our goal is to be able to make FPGAs available for you as just extra compute to get beyond the Moore's Law, so that you can take your deep learning algorithms and run them at essentially silicon speed and not be limited to any CPU. And that's something that's very, very exciting. I think we think as there is more and more autonomous work that's happening in the world, even for training, you will need a lot more computation. You want to take the costs of computation down. The best way to do it is to run it as close as possible to silicon. And we think FPGAs can be pretty revolutionary in it. And so we're building out Azure as that first AI supercomputer that's just going to be available to every developer, like supercomputers were in one day for big science. And now, in fact, again this week, we've had a series of announcements that are built on this. We have had a partnership with Elon Musk and Sam Altman's effort around OpenAI, where they're choosing to bring all of that research work. They're building a fantastic team out to do research in the open to Azure. In fact, they're building it on the new N-series virtual machines, which use NVIDIA GPUs. Again, a fantastic set of infrastructure that goes beyond the CPU for deep learning. We also are bringing our Azure Bot service. Just like how you build websites and mobile applications, you're all going to build bot interfaces to any application. And one of the key aspects of a bot interface is that very hard challenge of human language understanding or conversational understanding. And so the bot framework is all about bringing that language understanding capability to developers so that you can then build these new classes of interfaces. And what is, I think, perhaps one of the more revolutionary concepts is serverless compute with Azure Functions. And so when you think about what you as developers can do with serverless compute, with microservices that are about deep learning algorithms running on GPUs or FPGAs and creating intelligence, we are starting a complete new world that can change everything that we sort of today experience in our lives in terms of computation. And so that's really the infrastructure vision that we have as Microsoft. And one of the companies, again, I had a chance to meet with today was Plexura. And they are an ISV that got started in Azure in New Zealand. And they are building out solutions for IoT and retail, how to reason about this data and really create intelligence for retailers. And they've, of course, gone beyond the shores of New Zealand and are in McDonald's and in IKEA and many other top retail customers. But it's an amazing success story of a company that has a specific vision of how to change an industry using some of the new technologies and then going about it boldly and having success worldwide. And so for us, being able to celebrate those successes, play our small part in helping there is what gives us a lot of deep meaning in our own work and our platform creation. So I want to then move to the last platform opportunity, which is around more personal computing and what we are trying to do with Windows. Windows 10, to us, is not about building an operating system just for the device, but it's about building an operating system for the user across all their devices. That's the basic departure or the change in how we even conceptualize the role of an operating system. The operating systems have always been about managing resources and creating abstractions for application developers, the application platform and resource management. But in a world of multiple devices, you now need to think about this more across devices as opposed to just the kernel up. And that's what Windows 10 as a service means. We're also very focused on creating new forms of input and output, creating, in some sense, new computing and new computers. We started that with the two-in-one, some people talked about it as the refrigerator and a toaster, and guess what? Now everybody has a refrigerator and a toaster, and we welcome that. We think that's the same thing that led us to build even the Surface Hub, which is the big screen communal computing environment for meeting rooms and conference rooms, and we want every large screen to be a place where people are able to come together, collaborate, communicate, and share ideas. And then, of course, what we just announced a few weeks ago with Surface Studio brings forth our pursuit of trying to reinvent even the desktop computer, where it's not just about consumption, but it's about creativity and creation. Let's roll the video to just give you a flavor for that. You know, we are very, very excited about what developers can do when you have access to computing where you have all this multimodal input and output, where you have speech, you have ink, you have touch, you have the dial, and the ability to create that is unparalleled. Because one of the things that I always think about, in the last 10 years, we've had fantastic technology innovation that has driven consumption. I think the next 10 years are going to be defined by technology that's going to really usher in the next generation of creation. And to me, that's what we're in pursuit of with things like the Surface Studio. And of course, it's really developers like yourself imagining what you can do with creation software, creation tools. I just had a chance even to visit a school where they're teaching them computational understanding and Minecraft. I'm so inspired by that Minecraft generation as they grow up and think about how they will use computing to both create and consume. And I think that that's really the opportunity ahead. Now, when we talk about Windows 10, one of the key things that we really care deeply about is the accessibility of our software. One of the core attributes that is driving a lot of our investment is universal design inside of Windows. And of course, ultimately, that idea of having universal design and this plethora of devices means you can have people, like, for example, in this case, Ryman Healthcare and the operations that they run, to be able to, one, have the level of automation and care in every one of their facilities with devices be something that they can do so much more efficiently than with any previous generation of devices and operating systems. So it's fantastic to not just see the cutting edge new devices, but to be able to also have the ability for these to make a real difference, whether it's inside of an organization, a nonprofit, or any other organization. No story of Windows and our reinvention of Windows innovation going into Windows would be complete without talking about essentially what is a new medium that's getting created right in front of our eyes, which is mixed reality. To me, being able to take a 3D object, first of all, scanning the real world and converting it into a 3D object, adding physics to it, essentially giving it motion, and then taking that object and putting it back into the real world. That's that full spectrum of what is possible with mixed reality. And that's what's inspiring us to reinvent what is Microsoft Paint, that's got over 100 plus million users, to use that as a way to create 3D objects. That's what's leading us to build HoloLens to bring a world of mixed reality to fore. That's what is also leading us to build these virtual reality headsets that can plug in like a mouse or a keyboard into any Windows machine. So that's the future we envision in AR, VR, and we want to create a fantastic platform opportunity for developers. And it's awesome to see, in fact, right here, that Datacom took HoloLens and has applied it to change the experience of the Auckland Museum, where not only can somebody see all of the exhibits and examine them, but you can also, of course, have somebody Skype in remotely and see them and annotate the world that you're seeing. To me, the ability to have a field of view become an infinite computer is the ultimate computer that we always dreamed of, and that's really now within our grasp. I wanted you to take a look at what developers worldwide are doing with mixed reality. Let's roll the video. And whenever I've seen that tagline that we use with mixed reality, of when you change the way you see the world, you change the world you see, I think captures the essence of what developers are capable of. And of course, when we think about technology and what changes we aspire to make, it is that broad impact that drives us, making a real difference. And whenever I've had a chance to meet with someone who's had a dream of changing people's lives, that's been perhaps the thing that's most inspired me about being in technology. I had a chance this morning to meet with the founder of Volpara, and he has always had this dream of taking technology that I believe was developed in Oxford around detection of breast cancer using basically machine learning and pattern recognition and really helping radiologists become that much more efficient. Something like 35% of breast cancer goes undetected even today. And so bending the curve there can make a real difference in medical outcomes. And to be able to see that technology now is advancing, and he was talking to me about how he now fundamentally believes that something like deep learning can really, really make a huge difference. And their dream, of course, is to democratize it, make it available everywhere in every clinic. And that dream is so much more possible now because of the advances in technology, the democratization and the access to that technology. And to me, that really is ultimately what is the opportunity and responsibility in front of all of us. And so I want to just leave you with this fundamental call to action, which is that every one of you can not only dream the future, dream of the most impossible thing, but perhaps in this age where digital technology is so pervasive, you can realize the future that you just have dreamed of. And so with the hopes that many of you go on to create the apps and the experiences and the technologies that are going to shape our lives going forward, I really, again, want to thank you for being partners and people who are constantly pushing Microsoft to realize our dreams and mission. Thank you all very, very, very much.
Folks, I'm inspired by the possibilities that are opened up by our platforms and technologies. I hope that you are too. I hope that Satya has inspired you today to go out and achieve more in your businesses, in your organisations, in your communities. I'm inspired by the collaboration occurring in our industry. You know, looking at Google joining the .NET Foundation, the things that we're doing both as Microsoft and as a broader developer community on places like GitHub, collaborating, sharing our technology and our passion.